A reading from the book of Daniel. At that time, Michael, the great prince, the protector of your people, shall arise. There shall be a time of anguish, such as never occurred since nations first came into existence. But at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the sky, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to John. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with her perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not result in death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and you are going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now, Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live, and everyone who believes in me and lives will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead for 4 days. Jesus said to her, Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, Unbind him and let him go. The Gospel of Christ. As we've been working our way through the Gospel of John, we've been making a couple of observations from time to time as we've gone along. And that is that John, in structuring his gospel, has two sets of seven things that he highlights throughout the book. One of them is seven sayings that Jesus makes, where he emphatically states, I am, and then says something about that, like, I am the light of the world, I am the bread of life. Here he says, I am the resurrection and the life. But the other one is a set of seven miraculous signs that he does. And this, the raising of Lazarus from the dead, is the seventh of that set of seven signs. Once again, we have to remind ourselves that the whole point of a sign is that it points to something. The thing is not the sign itself, but the thing that the sign is pointing to. So one of the things that we always have to do when we're reading about these miraculous signs that Jesus is chronicled as having done in the Gospel of John is not to allow ourselves to give into the temptation to think that it's all about the signs. It's not, because the signs are pointing to something else, even in the case of this raising of Lazarus from the dead. Now, as remarkable as this miraculous sign is, we do need to acknowledge that it isn't actually that remarkable, if I dare to suggest such a thing. And that is to say that people have been raised from the dead already in the Bible. We see this in 1 Kings chapter 17, where the prophet Elijah is out in the wilderness. He comes to a place called Zarephath, comes across a widow who has an only son, and her son dies. She appeals to Elijah, and so Elijah prays and raises the son back to life. The dead son is now made alive. There was a resurrection at the hands of the prophet Elijah. And then his successor, Elisha, we often say Elisha, but then it gets confusing. Are we talking about Elijah or Elisha? So we just go with Elisha. It's easier to understand. But in 2 Kings chapter 4, Elisha is in an area called Shunem, and there's a man and a woman whose son dies. And so they call to Elisha. And Elisha prays, and the son is raised to life again. And then, curiously, in 2 Kings chapter 13, there's this little short episode where it simply acknowledges that sometimes that region of Israel was attacked by outside peoples, and there was a man who died, and so they were preparing him for burial when this other nation attacked them. And so, in the chaos, they kind of just threw the dead body somewhere, but he ended up being thrown into Elisha's grave because Elisha had died at this point. And it says that when the man's body hit the bones of Elisha, he sprang up to his feet and came back to life. So there are already three individual resurrections in the Hebrew Bible by the time we get to the time of Jesus. In the other Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we find that Jesus raises people from the dead there too. In the Gospel of Luke chapter 7, Jesus is approaching a city, and there is a funeral procession leaving the city. There is a widow whose only son has died. And so not only is she distraught that she has lost her son, but she also has lost her only visible means of support, because that's what a person widowed would be relied upon. She would have to have a man in her life to take care of her, and now her son is dead. And so the procession has the dead man being brought out on a bier. And Jesus sees how distraught the woman is, so he goes up and touches the bier and tells the young man to get up, and he does. He raises him from the dead, and the widow now has her son restored to her. And then in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we are told the story of a leader of the synagogue named Jairus, whose daughter is sick. He comes to Jesus and says, my daughter is ill to the point of death. Would you come and heal her? And Jesus says, sure, give me a second. And then he spends time dealing with a woman who has a hemorrhage for 12 years and heals her. But by this time that this is done, messengers come to Jairus and say, your daughter's died, so don't bother the teacher anymore. But when Jesus hears this, he says, don't worry, she's not dead, she's only asleep. Everybody laughs at him because they know that she's actually dead. But Jesus goes in to the daughter and says to her, Talitha cum, which means, little girl, I say to you, arise. And she is raised from the dead. There are instances of individual resurrections. The raising of Lazarus from the tomb is not actually that special when you see what else is already in the scriptures. It is curious why Matthew, Mark, and Luke all talk about the raising of Jairus' daughter, but they don't talk about the raising of Lazarus. The fact that only Luke talks about the raising of the widow from Nain, the raising of her son, might be kind of interesting because, okay, Luke happens to record a couple of times that Jesus raises someone from the dead rather than just once. But it is remarkable that only in John do we have the raising of Lazarus. Once again, I think what's happening here is John is constructing his gospel in order to make a point. And because the point of a miraculous sign is not the sign itself, but what it is pointing to, this is what John is trying to get across in this episode in his gospel. When we look at how this episode unfolds, it is kind of curious. What we see right from the beginning, and you might have heard it and kind of thought that was curious, when Lazarus is ill and they tell Jesus, hey, your friend, the guy you love, you know, Lazarus, he's sick. Jesus responds saying, this illness does not end in death. Instead, it's for God's glory, that the Son of God may be glorified through it, which is an interesting thing to say. It's kind of reminiscent of the man who was born blind in John chapter 9, when the disciples of Jesus ask him, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus said, it's for neither of those reasons. Instead, this is so that God might be glorified, that the Son of God might be shown to be full of glory. It's like this was part of the plan for a purpose of glorifying Jesus. That's what's coming across here as well. And so then it says, interestingly, accordingly, though Jesus loved Mary and Martha and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place that he was. He deliberately did not rush to get to Bethany to heal Lazarus. That's an interesting thing to read. By the time all's said and done, Jesus knows already that Lazarus has died. He, of course, uses the euphemism that he'd fallen asleep. Disciples don't get it, and he has to spell it out for them. Look, Lazarus is dead. And then he says, but I am glad for your sake that I was not there, so that you may believe. Well, this is a really interesting emphasis. If the concern is that your best friend or one of your really good friends has died of an illness, and the thing that you're going to say is, you know what, I'm glad we weren't there. Why? Well, because if I was there, I would have healed him and he wouldn't have died. But now that he's died, you're going to get to believe. This is not how we would normally face the situation. But because this is a miraculous sign that is making a point, John, in this chapter, is emphasizing the importance of belief, which, of course, is one of his key themes throughout his book. Again, he says at the end of the gospel, this is all written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. This is his purpose for writing the gospel. And here in this episode, he's making the point that his disciples who are with him through the death of Lazarus are going to be able to believe. That is what is most important. So, away they go. Mary and Martha, of course, are distraught. If you'd only been here, he wouldn't have died. Jesus isn't too terribly concerned because he already knows what he's going to do, and he encourages them. But what's really, really interesting is when he asks Martha, when Martha comes to him, he says to her, rather, your brother will rise again. And what is her response? I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. What that is telling us is by this time in Israel's history, there already has developed an idea that there is a life of sorts after this one. That she talks about a resurrection at the last day means she's already expecting that there is something along the lines of eternal life to be found. That's already there. Our first reading today was from Daniel chapter 12. It was a rather curious reading there, but in there it talked about the fact that after death, people would be raised to life, some to a judgment of blessing, others to a judgment of condemnation. That's the earliest it appears in the Bible, written about 200 years before the time of Jesus. In the book of Daniel, we already see this notion of a resurrection of all people after this life with blessing or consequence as a result. There's another book written by a Jewish group of authors called First Enoch. It's not part of the scriptures. It's something called part of the pseudepigrapha. But in this book, Enoch is said to describe, having had a vision of the afterlife, that it was divided into four quadrants. And three of the quadrants, they're all separated. Three of the quadrants are for people who did well in life, and they get to wait there for the final judgment. But the fourth quadrant is more of a prison for those who did not do so well in life. And the chapter goes on to describe that when the final judgment takes place, those in the three quadrants will receive reward, but those in the fourth quadrant will receive judgment. The implication of that judgment being that life will finally come to a complete and utter end for them. It's not eternal torment or anything like that. That notion comes later, and so that's not part of the picture right now, but the idea would that there would be a resurrection yet to come at the final judgment. These ideas are already going on, and that is what Martha has in mind. So Martha already believes this. So anything that Jesus is telling her has nothing to do with life after this one. That's already settled. And in fact, when she says that answer after Jesus says, "Your brother will rise again," she says, "Yeah, I know he will rise again at the resurrection," but she's concerned about right now. And so Jesus' response is interesting. He says to her, "I am the resurrection and the life." She already believes in resurrection. She already believes that there will be a resurrection. Daniel already talks about it. First Enoch has already talked about it. People already know there is a resurrection. Jesus' answer is saying, "I am the resurrection." This resurrection you're waiting for, this resurrection you're expecting for Lazarus in the day to come, I am that. And he says, and I am the life. This idea of life is one of the primary themes that we see throughout the Gospel of John. In the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible, it appears like 42 times in the Gospel. 42 is a really good number. And having life show up that many times is something that you cannot miss. In fact, even in the first chapter, speaking of the Logos, the Word, speaking of the Christ, in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. And again, the statement at the end of the book, "These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name," this is the big emphasis that is being made here. The point that this sign is pointing to is that not only is Jesus the Christ, the very resurrection that people have already come to understand is part of the package after this life, but he is indeed very much the life itself. And so when he proceeds then to raise Lazarus from the dead, this man that has been dead for 4 days, in Jewish understanding, once you went past day three, you were really, really dead because now you're starting to decay. And yet, he raised him from the dead, showing that he is indeed the life. This is what John is wanting us to understand. Jesus is the source of life. What he's also doing in this passage is already projecting towards Jesus' own death and resurrection. The fact that Lazarus was buried in a tomb with a stone in front of it, and then the stone gets taken away, and Lazarus comes out of that tomb, mirrors, of course, what we know is going to happen with Jesus. He's buried in the tomb. The women go to the tomb. The stone has been rolled away, and Jesus is not there because he is risen. We're getting that image already put into our minds as we're reading the Gospel of John, because that's going to happen for Jesus later. But what we are seeing with Lazarus is this emphasis that Jesus is saying, "I am the resurrection. I am the life. I, the Christ, the anointed one, the Messiah, the one who is identified as the Logos or the Word at the beginning of the book, I am the one that indeed is the source of this resurrection and this life that we hope for. And I've said before that the emphasis that John is making in his gospel is that the story in this book is about the Christ. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are emphasizing on the life of Jesus, but John is emphasizing the reality of the Christ, the second person of the Trinity, very God from very God, the one in whom we find our source for life and everything. So when we read this chapter, we need to understand what John is pointing at. We do not need to get hung up on the details about this resurrection act. Let's not forget that Lazarus will die again, and Mary and Martha will die, and all the disciples will die, and everybody who was around there 2,000 years ago have died. Even the amazing thing of Lazarus's raising from the dead still results in his physical death, because we all die. But if there is this promise of resurrection and the life after this one, well, that's a good thing. But what do we make of the promise of life now? What it was that Martha was hoping for Lazarus in the first place? Where do we go with that? I mean, even Jesus' response in that light is curious. He says, "Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live." Okay, if you believe in Jesus, even if you die, you will live. Okay, that sounds like the resurrection afterwards, right? But then he says, "And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die." And it's kind of a jarring, okay, is death involved or isn't it? Is it actually going to happen? What's going on here? And I think it's a curiosity of John's style to try to bring this point out. But here is what I would suggest that we can do to hang our hats on right now with this. The idea of a life after this one has already been established, and Christ is that resurrection. But Christ is also the life that we have now. So what John is driving at, I think, is not suggesting that by believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and therefore having life in his name, I don't think John is actually talking about the sweet by and by and what is yet to come. He's talking about now. He's talking about that our faith in Christ is what establishes for us a way of approaching this life that is so much greater than just making it through day by day. It is so much more than simply enduring to the end. It is more than simply thinking, okay, you know, life is difficult, life is suffering, life is pain or whatever, but one day when it's all done, I have somebody to look forward to. Well, that would be Jesus saying, "I am the resurrection." But because he says, "I am the life," the promise is that we don't have to take that approach, just waiting until we're done so that we can finally get the reward. By Jesus saying, "I am the life," he's talking about what we have now. It's a whole package deal. It's not a matter of just putting in your time until later, but instead being able to approach life with that understanding that because Jesus is the Christ, we are given an embodied example of what it means to live close to the divine. Indeed, to live as one indwelt by the divine, one who incarnates the divine, as Jesus himself shows. And we are invited to participate in that. Coming back to what Jesus said, it is good that Lazarus died. It's good that you weren't there, that we weren't there, because now you may believe. The witnessing of the raising of Lazarus and Jesus' declaration to be the resurrection and the life was meant to give the disciples around him the opportunity to believe that that was so. And as a result, their lives now get to mean something, have purpose, have inspiration, and can be lived in a way that goes beyond what they would expect their normal everyday life would be. For what that might look like, you have to wait a bit, because that comes in chapter 14. Amen.